Hi, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. This 4th of July weekend, as people all across the country light their grills and their fireworks, we ask, what's the best way to put your finances to work for the good of the nation?
Believe it or not, paying taxes is patriotic. Oliver Wendell Holmes said that paying taxes, although he didn't like it, it bought civilization.
We'll have thoughts on wallet and country from our listeners. And if you didn't book a vacation this summer because you thought you couldn't afford it, think again. The lousy economy means some cheap deals if you look in the right spots.
Be an ambulance chaser this summer for travel. Go where the disasters are.
And if you're one of the many Americans who thinks plastic is perilous, we envision a world without credit.
I tried to go out the other day without any credit cards at all.
So you are literally trying to leave home without it.
I am.
Getting your cash on. That story and more coming up on Marketplace Money from American Public Media. From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, this is Marketplace Money. Any sparks you see this 4th of July weekend will likely be coming from fireworks. The U.S. economy continues to look a little gray. The unemployment rate is at its highest level in decades. 14.5 million people are now getting unemployment checks. But all benefits are not created equal. How much unemployment people get boils down to one thing: location, location, location. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith, in for Tess Vigeland. This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media.
Marketplace Money is supported by Thriven Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit financial service provider helping its members take charge of their financial strategies and put today's market on their side. More at thriven.com.
The unemployment rate in the U.S. now sits at 9.5%. We haven't seen numbers like that since 1983. And many economists predict the jobless rate will hit 10% this year, as construction, manufacturing, and the financial sector continue to shed jobs. Now, if you lose your job, you just go down to the local unemployment office and file for benefits, right? Well, that all depends. Turns out the state you live in decides how much your weekly check is worth and whether you're eligible at all. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
The first stop on my tour of state unemployment systems is South Carolina. It's been hurting in this recession. Its unemployment rate is the third worst in the nation, at just over 12%. The city of Greenville has seen many of its textile mills close. Now, the auto parts plants that replace them are cutting back.
Right, so we're learning words, which are parts of speech, and we're going to learn how to make really good sentences with those words.
Some of the locals who get pink slips end up here at Greenville's Free Literacy Center.
March 19th was my last day of work. I didn't even know it was coming. No notice or anything.
Anthony Carbajal is 29. He's compact and powerful. It's easy to imagine him in his old job, welding metal crates for John Deere lawnmowers. But these days, Carbajal spends most of his time studying for his GED. He has house payments to make and three kids to support, all on his weekly unemployment check.
I'm getting $332 a week.
How does that compare to what you were making?
Oh, no, not good.
Next, let's jump across the country to Oregon. It has the second worst unemployment in the country. I met Michael Diamond at a Portland coffee shop. He's also a welder with three kids to support. He used to make rail cars, but 2.5 months ago, he got laid off. Diamond was making nearly $600 a week.
And when I'm on unemployment, it's about $425.
Let's run those numbers again. Two skilled workers whose paychecks differed by about $50. On unemployment, the South Carolina welder takes home
$332 a week.
The Oregon welder
$425.
It really matters what state you live in. The levels of benefits vary extremely wildly.
That's Andrew Stettner of the National Employment Law Project. He says it's not just how much you get that's all over the map.
In some states, it may be 2/3 of all unemployed workers are getting benefits. In some states, it's less than 1 out of 4.
This patchwork has existed since the New Deal, when unemployment insurance was first introduced. To get the plan through, states were allowed to set their own rules on key items like how they calculate benefit amounts and who's eligible. There are states where you can quit your job, you can even be fired, and still draw benefits. In other states, you have to be laid off for strictly economic reasons. And the discrepancies in benefits can really slam middle-class professionals. In low-paying states like Nebraska and Louisiana, laid-off workers cap out around $300 a week on unemployment, no matter how much they used to make. In New Jersey and Minnesota, they'd get double that. even after accounting for cost of living differences, that spread is wide. In Oregon, Michael Diamond's unemployment check is pretty good by national standards, but he complains it doesn't go very far.
There's no way to survive on that. The bills alone for the rent or the house payments and the electric and the utilities, and with the car and the insurance, you know, it's almost impossible.
Which is one reason the federal government is pushing states to boost benefits. Oregon's received millions in stimulus money to put more low-income workers on the rolls, and residents can keep getting checks longer now if they can't find a job. South Carolina's governor rejected that stimulus offer from the feds. Many South Carolina political and business leaders share his opposition to making more people eligible for unemployment. They don't want to plow extra money into what they think sometimes functions as a shadow welfare system for people who can't find steady work.
How you been?
Sarah Googe and her husband have run a feed and seed store in the small town of Fairfax for 3 decades.
Well, we sell baby chicks. We also sell a full line of garden supplies.
Googe says business is pretty good right now, despite the fact that nearly 1 in 4 people in this rural county are unemployed. She says locals often come in asking her to certify they've applied for a job so they can stay on unemployment.
And I go, you're not even looking for a job. Why should I sign it? I mean, this happens every week. I say if they don't have a job, give them a shovel and a hoe and a sack of seed.
Soon, Googe may get her way. South Carolina's unemployment system has fallen $350 million in debt from paying benefits in the deepening recession. So it may have to raise business taxes or boot people from the rolls at the worst possible time for the local economy. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace Money.
That story was reported in collaboration with the investigative newsroom ProPublica.
Marketplace Money is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit financial service provider helping its members take charge of their financial strategies and put today's market on their side. More at thrivent.com. By Gather.com, where friends keep up with people, conversations, and moments that matter. People are talking about their family's economy at Gather.com. And by FINRA Investor Education Foundation, helping inform today's investor through innovative grant making and educational funding, online at finrafoundation.org.
It's time for The Straight Story. That's where our economics editor, Chris Farrell, gives us his insights into the economic issues of the day. Hey, Chris.
How you doing?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing well.
So it's the 4th of July weekend, and we are celebrating our country's independence.
Wonderful weekend.
Yes.
I love it.
Burgers, beer, fireworks, what's not to like. And the origin, of course, of Independence Day was freedom from British taxes. But
Yes. What
about financial independence for the rest of us? What about personal financial independence?
Well, Stacey, I think that's a great question because it is Independence Day, Independence Weekend. And, you know, a lot of people are really stressed out during this great recession. So what would financial independence mean? What would financial independence mean to you?
Well, no more credit card debt would definitely be a good step towards financial independence for me.
Well, I think that's for many people. I mean, for a whole generation, personal finance, what it really means is getting out of credit card debt. You know, to my parents' generation, it was burning that mortgage. It was just getting rid of the mortgage. They talk about burn the mortgage parties.
Right.
But I want to take a slight twist here. Getting out of debt is wonderful. But what I want to emphasize is savings. And the reason why I want to emphasize savings is that's the financial independence that allows you to do what you want. If you have savings and you want to take a career risk, you'd like to downsize and spend more time with your family or volunteer in the community. If you have savings, you have freedom of choice. And one of the messages that's coming out of this great recession is the need to save more.
Well, we are saving more.
Yes, this is a positive thing. And it's not just positive because it's good for you. It's positive because this is how we declare our freedom. We bring about control over our lives. It's not the credit card company that decides you go to work because you have to pay the bill. It's you decide, you know what? I want to do this. And I have the savings that gives me the freedom to do that. And that, to me, is financial independence.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for your thoughts on financial independence, and I hope you're enjoying your weekend.
I am, and thank you.
This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. The 4th of July is, of course, all about getting into the patriotic spirit. For some of us, that can include how you spend your money. Here are some thoughts on spending to serve your country.
I'm Michael Holland, and I live in Altadena, California. Believe it or not, paying taxes is patriotic. Oliver Wendell Holmes said that paying taxes, although he didn't like it, it bought civilization.
This land is your land.
We were given the option of a parcel tax, with the proceeds specifically going to these two libraries, $40 a year, maybe not even that much, to bring in Wi-Fi, increase the books, increase the programs. My wife and I, that was what we wanted to support. That was something that was very dear to us. We make sure we use it. We go out of our way to use it.
This land was made for you and me.
My name is Kate Strobel from Sheridan, Wyoming. I'd never really done anything with the stock market, but right after Election Day, I bought my first stock online as my own way of boosting the economy. I purchased shares in infrastructure as well as renewable energy. I thought if more people put money in rather than take money out, first of all, you're getting terrific bargains. And if it can help keep people in jobs or create jobs, all the better.
This land was made for you and me.
Barbara Sherum from Ann Arbor, Michigan. I think a patriotic decision I've made is to give time as well as some money to charities because it builds a certain sense of reciprocity for one another as citizens.
This land is your land.
Guten Morgen, das ist Ben Braun. My name is Ben Braun. I'm from Cloquet, Minnesota, and I currently live in Rostock, Germany. Whenever a German talks about the credit crisis, they always say, well, America's credit crisis, giving us ownership to it. So I hope that I'm helping just by contributing with work. I still have some investments and some money in U.S. banks. If not under my mattress, someone somewhere is doing something with it. For the 4th of July, I've looked around at a couple different grocery stores. As of yet, I have not found any American beer. I'm going to a bigger city this weekend. I'm going to Hamburg, and maybe I can get a Budweiser or something there.
The economic crunch has many Americans trading their European vacations for something a little closer to home. Sales are up at camping stores, but the best-selling items aren't the fanciest.
The new cool GPS watch or the brand new tent that's 4 ounces lighter than their previous tent. People aren't really shopping for that.
We'll shop for camping basics, and if the great outdoors don't sound so great to you, we have tips on other last-minute vacation deals. It's all coming up on Marketplace Money from American Public Media. This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith, in for Tess Vigeland. With all the news of housing prices, job losses, and government bailouts, you might have forgotten. It's summer, vacation season. Of course, many of us, myself included, didn't book our trips because of worries about the economy. AAA reports the number of Americans traveling this weekend is at a three-year low, even though gas prices are roughly half what they were last year. But it's not too late for us. Pauline Frommer of the Travel Book Frommers writes a series of budget travel books. We asked her to give us the skinny on where the good vacation deals are this summer.
We are seeing the best deals in travel to pretty much every part of the globe that I have ever seen in my career in travel, and that includes the period right after 9/11 when travel was depressed as well. I returned from Rome just this Saturday. My plane out there was half empty. We were all able to lie down in entire rows of seats. A year ago, that would have been just a fantasy.
I myself did not plan a summer vacation because, you know, we were all sort of waiting to see with our finances. Now, of course, we're going crazy and have decided that we, you know, have to take some kind of summer vacation. What do you recommend for people like me who didn't plan ahead?
Sure. The thing that you do is you follow the disasters in where you travel.
Like an ambulance chaser, only for travel.
Yes, be an ambulance chaser this summer for travel. For example, Ireland. The Celtic tiger is now a pussycat. It's seen its economy melt down. And we've seen incredible air hotel packages to Ireland for the summer months. $6.99 for airfare from New York, six-day car rental, and vouchers for B&Bs all over the country. Iceland, another example. Great prices in Iceland. Go where the disasters are. The housing crisis is hitting people who have bought vacation condos. So you can play Let's Make a Deal. I was actually looking at Hawaii. They lost a full 25% of the flights that used to get there when Aloha Airlines went bankrupt and ATA. I've seen two-bedroom condos going for as little as $80 a night on the island of Maui.
Wow, I'm sold. If people are having trouble with their finances right now, what's the best approach to planning a trip?
You know, travel providers really are desperate. What I'm worried about is we're going to start seeing some go belly up. So this may be the first year that you consider getting travel insurance. I'm not talking about a hotel night or an airfare, but if you're going to take a cruise, if you're going to take a package tour, if you're going to rent an apartment, you may want to get insurance just to protect your money.
You can find more of Pauline Frommer's tips on frugal travel on our website at marketplace.org. Another cheap travel option, camping. Campgrounds of America has seen a record number of reservations, and they say the number of rookie campers is up 20% over last year. So I headed down to a local outdoor store, Adventure 16, to find out what it costs to finance a camping trip.
Come on down, I'll show you clothing and boots. And
assistant manager Heather Christensen helps me figure out what I need. She says she's seeing a lot more people like me.
And we're seeing a lot fewer people looking for kind of the high-end toys, the new cool GPS watch or the brand new tent that's 4 ounces lighter than their previous tent. People aren't really shopping for that. What we are seeing a lot more of is people that are price conscious. They're looking for activities they can do on a budget, and they may be new to this.
And there are some basics every beginner needs, like a tent.
The basic ones will run you around $175 all the way up to $400.
Right. The $175 one looks fine. Next on the list, a sleeping bag.
This is part of the Ultra Lamina series by Mountain Hardware. It's also incredibly light, if you feel it.
Yeah. And how much is it?
Something like that usually runs you about $190, $200.
So $175 for the tent and $200 for the sleeping bag.
Pack up.
Okay.
Okay.
And now you want to tighten up those shoulder straps.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yep. Do you feel how that pulls
out
a little bit in your lower
back? Whoa. Yeah.
Good.
The not-so-good thing about this Gregory Frame backpack is the $200 price tag, which brings my grand total to $575. And I'm not done yet.
Hiking poles from $40 to $110. Socks, about $16 a pair. Boots, $200. $50 for a pair of hiking pants.
Doesn't take long to hit the $1,000 mark, especially since there are all of these tempting gadgets around, like the Jetboil cook stove for $100.
It will boil a liter of water in about 40, 45 seconds, even at 11,000 feet.
Wow.
Yeah. Are you familiar with Jetboil?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, it's my stove.
Warren Lintz was there shopping, too. He's a veteran backpacker.
So you have the fancy stove. Do you spend a lot on gear?
Yes, I do. I spend a hell of a lot on gear. And it's not cheap. It's not cheap. It's not like you're saving money. I probably spend more on my gear than at the Four Seasons for the weekend.
Oh. But Heather says she can trick out a family of four for around $500 if they rent their gear. Warren says even with all his gear, though, he spends a few hundred dollars before every camping trip. But to Warren, a week in the wilderness, priceless.
It's not about the money necessarily, no. It's about getting out there, tasting the fresh air. To me, it's a place where you find a bit of peace and quiet and silence.
If you have ideas on cheap getaways, or maybe just quiet and silent getaways this summer, we'd love to hear from you. Write us at marketplace.org. Summer isn't just travel time, it's also high season for internships. For a lot of students and recent grads, the internship is crucial for building a resume. The downside is, of course, that internships don't usually pay very well, or at all. The financial crisis isn't helping that situation, and it's also made employment prospects for young workers pretty bleak. All of that has many young Americans looking overseas for opportunity. Gretchen Wilson has more from South Africa.
When Benjamin Bradlow graduated from Swarthmore College in Pennsylvania last June, he was excited to work as a journalist in Philadelphia. He got a temporary internship at a public radio station. But with the financial crisis,
it was clear that there were going to be no jobs to be had for somebody who was recently graduated with little professional experience after graduation.
He certainly wasn't alone. It was like this all over Philly.
I just had this constant feeling that there were lots of people like me, recent graduates who were very ambitious, very much filled with the same kind of sense of entitlement that I think comes from people who are just out of college. And then, like everybody experiences, a slap in the face of, no, things aren't going to be perfect for you. You're going to have to make your own way.
So the 23-year-old made his way to Johannesburg, where he had some family connections and where newspapers are still going pretty strong.
The industry is not on the brink of disaster as it is in America.
South Africa is not immune to the global economic climate. In fact, it just entered its first recession in 17 years. But young Americans are finding opportunities in Africa's biggest economy.
Hello, this is Civicus's Civil Society Watch program, Angel speaking.
My name is Angel DiPietro. I'm from Long Island, New York. I am now a student at Hofstra University School of Law. I just finished my first year.
When most of her peers were waiting to hear back from New York's top law firms, she was on a plane to South Africa for an internship with a nonprofit called Civicus. She's building a database on laws relating to the rights of assembly in more than a dozen African nations. She hopes this work will make her more competitive back home. Something that's necessary, she says, because in some ways, she's entering the global workforce at a disadvantage.
I speak one language, and I'm U.S.-based. So for me to kind of get ahead or is to go abroad as much as possible.
Spending time in another country isn't a prerequisite for many careers. But today's interns say globalization and the financial crisis makes staying in the U.S. seem a little 20th century. Brandon Solowski is pursuing a double master's in public policy and Chinese studies at the University of Michigan. He's working in Johannesburg conducting research for a group that promotes democratic accountability.
It's quite obvious you really have to understand the international system. You need international experience. You need contacts. The traditional route working on Wall Street or in D.C. is not working anymore.
In his public policy program, summer internships are a requirement. He says some of his peers are considering international options for the first time.
People are starting to look elsewhere and into new regions, things they hadn't thought of prior. So this has definitely impacted a lot of the students' thinking about what they're going to do in their career.
Interns say lower pay grades in some countries are offset by lower costs of living and a chance to travel. In many emerging economies, companies, nonprofits, and even government offices are quick to welcome American university students because they already have skills that are in real demand. Karina Cronin is with the United Nations Volunteer Program.
And so they come with, you know, strong analytical skills, an ability to write and communicate. I mean, even sometimes your computer skills that sometimes are not possessed by everybody within an organization.
Sometimes that means American interns can find themselves with a lot more responsibility and leadership than they might have had back home. Bradlow, the reporter from Philadelphia, scored a 3-month contract as a multimedia journalist for The Times, a major daily newspaper in Johannesburg. Within days, he was out in South Africa's shanty towns covering the national election.
Which was exactly what I wanted.
In the newsroom, Bradlow edits an audio slideshow on his MacBook. He's taking lots of training courses, too. In some ways, he can't believe his luck.
I'm thinking to myself, there is no way that this is happening in America anymore. I mean, these paid internship training programs are long gone.
Bradlow's internship will come to an end in the next few weeks. But he hopes to be kept on for a little longer, to take advantage of the opportunities he says he can't get back home. In Johannesburg, I'm Gretchen Wilson for Marketplace Money.
Marketplace Money is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit financial service provider helping its members take charge of their financial strategies and put today's market on their side. More at thrivent.com. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Fund, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
A couple weeks ago, Tess had lunch with a guy who'd had lunch with a guy whose name we all know. Warren Buffett. Manesh Pabrai had paid more than $650,000 for the privilege, split with a friend. It's an annual charity auction for the Glide Foundation in San Francisco, and a chance to meet his idol in person.
It just so happens that my hero is alive when I'm alive, and my hero actually is willing to accept a bribe to sit down for a meal.
This year's bidding is now closed. We don't know who won. It was done anonymously. But we do know the price tag, $1.6 million. So much for the economy slowing things down. This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. It's time for Getting Personal, the part of the show where we take on your questions and our economics editor, Chris Farrell, gives us all the answers. Hi, Chris.
Hi. At least I tried to give all the answers. How's that?
Well, that's good enough. So first up, we have Ellen in Brooklyn on the phone. What's your question for Chris today?
I am going to take early retirement soon.
Okay.
But I'm being offered a choice between a pension with a lump sum or a monthly annuity. And I was wondering if you could help me with some guidelines for making my decision.
Typically, the employer gives you either it's an annuity, you know, a monthly payment, or it's a lump sum. Is that the choice you have? There's nothing in
That's
between.
Right.
What is a monthly annuity? Is that a fixed payment?
Yes. The way to think about it is when you're retired and you're 62 and you take your early Social Security, say, just make, you know, to do an example, and then you get your income from Social Security. Well, you can get similarly an income from an annuity that is sold by an insurance company. An annuity is just the jargon term we use. Social Security really is an annuity. So if you take the annuity, the nice thing about that is you get the certainty of an income for the rest of your life. But if you don't live very long, the annuity typically dies with you, and there's nothing to pass on to heirs or to a charity or to some organization that you'd like to do that. But then again, you can't outlive the money, so that's kind of nice.
So the other thing, Ellen, is how close are you to retirement? How old are you?
I will be 55 in a month or so, so I really am taking an early retirement. But I will be finding another job. The pension I'm talking about is small. So I need to make more income.
Okay, that would lean me toward doing the lump sum.
Oh.
And here's the reason why. You're still young. you're going to continue to be working, you're going to have an income. And what a lot of people are doing, and I think this is a very smart thing to do, is if you do take the lump sum, you roll it over into an IRA, and then you annuitize a portion of that. So let's say you have $100,000. You may decide to put $25,000 into an immediate annuity. That's another alternative, is to try and say, okay, so how much of my income do I want to have guaranteed? How much of my income do I want to have at risk and I want to have control over? And the other thing to need to think about is inflation. And the more that you lock your money into an annuity, that can be a greater risk over time. So I can't say lump sum annuity, but what I can say is I think more people today appreciate a certainty of income. And where that comes from your employer, or where that comes from you buying from an insurance company what's called an immediate annuity, the certainty of income and not outliving that resource, that income, is really relief of mind to people.
Okay.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your question, Ellen. Hope we were able to help you out.
Yes, you were. Thanks so much for your help.
And next we have Cleo in Newton, Massachusetts. She's also getting ready for retirement. She's planning to sell her home and move to a seaside condo, which sounds really nice.
Doesn't that? That sounds very
nice. Yeah, sounds pretty good. But here's the thing. The places she likes cost more than her current home is worth. And she's apparently heard that if she retires and then tries to get a loan for the pricier beach condo, no one will lend her the money, even if she shows the bank that she can cover the loan with money coming in from her pension and Social Security. Is that true, Chris?
No. It is not true. There are a number of sources of income that banks look at, obviously salary and wages being a big one. And then they'll look at Social Security, disability, retirement, and veterans pensions. So definitely is considered as part of income.
Are retirees considered at a disadvantage in getting a loan?
No. I mean, I'm in the camp that believes for most retirees, it's not a good idea.
Why isn't it a good idea?
Well, you know, as you got into the 1990s, early 2000s, the story sort of grew about it was okay to go into retirement with a big mortgage. And I think one of the things that we've learned over time is, you know, some of these conservative ideas, there's a reason why they exist. And so people who own their home outright or own most of their home, they have a lot of equity in their home. As they enter into the retirement years, they're a lot more secure. They're less influenced by what's happening in the housing market. They're less influenced by what's happening in the overall stock market. Market's up, market's down. Doesn't affect you as much.
So you think she should go ahead and get the loan?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It sounds like she can well cover it. And she's a little bit puzzled. Why wouldn't someone lend to her? And the fact is, I think she won't have any trouble finding a lender as long as, you know, she has the income to cover the mortgage and she puts down a hefty down payment and she has a good credit score. I mean, all the same rules apply.
Well, and we should probably, you know, go down and check it out and just make sure that it's all financially sound.
Yeah, maybe a little picnic. Sounds good.
I could use a trip to the beach. If you're making a big financial move and want some advice, give us a call. You can ask your question right on our voicemail. The number is 877-275-6669. That's 877-ASK-MONY. Or go to marketplace.org and find the Getting Personal link where you can write us anytime. If you're one of the millions out of work, here's a novel tip for your job search. Try thinking of yourself as a hot new product you're selling.
You've reached Lawson Clark, male copywriter.
If his goal is to market himself as the voice of the guy, he's done it in spades.
Qualifications are so last year. Plus, for many of us, credit cards are a huge part of everyday life. But what would everyday life and the economy look like without them? We'll peek behind that curtain. You're listening to Marketplace Money from American Public Media. This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith, in for Tess Vigeland. New rules on credit cards are slated to take effect next year. They'll restrict certain fees and charges. We talked with one of the architects of that legislation, Senator Chris Dodd of Connecticut. He said he's been pushing for something like this for 20 years.
We've never done anything like this before with the credit card industry. It's the only contractual relationship I know of where one party can arbitrarily change the conditions at any point in the contract.
Still, with 7 months to go before the changes take effect, credit card issuers are trying to change some of the conditions now. Banks are hitting consumers with higher penalties for late payments, jacking up interest rates, and cutting back rewards on those Mileage Plus cards. What's a credit card user to do? Well, that got us thinking. What would happen if we all just stopped using our credit cards? Sean Cole imagines such a world.
Before we get into what would happen if a lot of us stopped using credit cards, we should probably ask whether that's likely.
Because I don't really think it is.
James Chesson is chief economist for the American Bankers Association, and of course a big champion of credit cards. He says we have to distinguish between people who just dip their toes in the river of credit every month and those who are drowning in it.
56% of cardholders don't ever revolve any balance. So there's absolutely no reason why they would stop using it. They're using it for a convenience.
Actually, there is a reason. Some of these cardholders are getting fed up with the banks that issue their cards. People like Mary Grace Dembeck.
These were the two letters that I got sent. Now the day I...
Mary's a painter and a children's book author and a grandmother in Connecticut. The letters she showed me were both from credit card companies. One of them was shutting down and closing her account. She felt kind of bad for them. The other said it was raising her annual percentage rate out of the blue.
So what did you think of that?
Oh, I was incensed, you know, because I'm on automatic pay, so I've never missed a payment.
And she's been trying to get off the plastic anyway. She's got four or five cards, and lately she's looked at them as little enemies, tempting her to overshop.
I tried to go out the other day without any credit cards at all because I think that when I reach that, I'll be a success.
So you are literally trying to leave home without it.
I am.
Which brings us back to our original question. What if a lot of Americans, out of anger or necessity, or just because they feel like it, decide to switch to cash?
Well, it's incredibly disruptive to the entire national economy.
This is Robert Manning, the guy who wrote Credit Card Nation.
I mean, the more cash that flows through the system, the more personal attention to money flows, the less fees that the banking system will get, the higher the cost.
He talked like this for 2 minutes straight, and it was interesting. He managed to wind his way from the economic impact to this vision of a total cultural shift.
Forcing people to save and plan, and by the time they actually plan and save to purchase an item, they may decide that they really don't need it. I mean, it will be a complete transformation of American society.
And you know how often those happen. Manning says a lot of people still expect everything to go back to normal. So why change their habits? Of course, it's not like America was always a credit card nation. It used to be cash was the only option, and some people are still living that way.
When I reach the place I'm going, I will sure...
People like the legendary country singer Wynonna Judd. For a long time, she was a real spendaholic. Says she lost her fortune at one point, and then she cut up her credit cards.
When I go into Target or any of these stores, I pull out my little money envelope, and I hand it over to the girl, and she kind of looks at me like, you're Wynonna Judd. Where's your, you know, platinum-plated credit card that says the fabulous touring Wynonna Judd of love?
The money envelope is a thing with her. It has to have bills of every denomination, including a couple hundreds, all facing the same way. She was ready to whip out one of the hundreds the other day, at Starbucks of all places, but she stopped herself.
And I'm thinking, wait a minute, whoa, time out. What am I going to do with this coffee press? I don't press coffee. And I just remember thinking, you know, this is really ridiculous.
And do you feel like it's because you're carrying around that envelope of money instead of a credit card that you're able to do that?
I think so.
So Starbucks loses a sale. Wynonna Judd can still live with herself. It's a mixed bag, this cash-only proposition. And again, there's no telling how many potential Wynonna Judds or Mary Grace Dembecks are out there trying to leave home without it, or why they might choose to. Sitting with Mary in Connecticut, I reread the letter that made her incensed. It actually said they were raising her cash advance rate.
Okay, so I've never taken a cash advance.
So you wouldn't really have to worry about this.
So I shouldn't have gotten upset with them in the first place?
Maybe.
But she's still going to switch to cash only, she says. Using the cards feels like she's getting something for nothing. And using cash hurts, but at least it feels real. In Boston, I'm Sean Cole for Marketplace Money.
Charging a little too much on your credit card is probably the easiest way to get in financial trouble. But if you're out of work and have no money coming in, you might not have much of a choice. It's a decision thousands of unemployed Americans make every day, especially since it can be really hard to find work right now. Marketplace's Steve Henn found a former ad man affected by the bear economy who's taking an unusual approach to his job search.
At a going-away party for colleagues who'd just been canned, ad man Lawson Clark thought he was fine.
Like an idiot, I was going around hugging everybody, saying, "Don't worry, it's fine. I've been laid off twice before, once by my own father, so it doesn't get any worse than that."
The next day, the head of HR dropped the axe. So Clark did the only thing any self-respecting ad executive could do. He put together a website featuring himself sprawled on a bearskin rug.
It's Burt Reynolds' famous pose in Cosmopolitan.
Naked.
Oh, well, all right then.
Pam Murtaugh is a marketing consultant.
That is interesting.
A 70s-era portable TV doubles as a fig leaf while displaying Clark's work. Catchy, male-oriented spots like this one for Bob's cut-rate men's clothes.
Men all over Europe are wearing capri pants.
Capri pants.
Clark took a similar approach to selling himself. But I asked Pam Murtaugh if this strategy was really the best way to go.
Well, it depends on your goal of marketing yourself. If his goal is to market himself as the voice of the guy, he's done it in spades.
She says he's got it down when it comes to marketing ironic macho to young men. But Clark's former employer did a lot of work for companies like Hershey's. And marketing executive Adam Hampt says ad agencies want writers who target women, too. They control roughly 80% of all consumer purchases. So
it's not looking great for him, but he might want to consider, you know, relocating to Russia or Eastern Europe, where this kind of male-centric approach still has a lot of runway ahead of it.
Still, Clark's body of work has gotten him a mention in Ad Age and 250,000 web hits.
Would it get him hired? I don't know. But man, it's worth a laugh. And right now, everybody needs that.
You've reached Lawson Clark, male copywriter.
Leave a message. He'll get back to you. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace Money.
Marketplace Money is supported by Thriven Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit financial service provider helping its members take charge of their financial strategies and put today's market on their side. More at thriven.com. And by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act.
And we're back with more Getting Personal. Chris, we have Jim on the line from Steamboat Springs, Colorado. How are you, Jim?
Fine, thank you.
And how can we help you out today?
Well, 9 years ago, my wife and I received a nice direct mail solicitation to tour a new timeshare not too far from us. And as an incentive, they were offering 4 airplane tickets and hotel time in Hawaii.
Ah.
So we thought, we're not really in the market, but we thought we would go attend. And by the time we walked out that day, we had left a check for $15,000.
Oh.
And we owned a week in a timeshare. Now, it still wasn't as bad as it sounds, because we were excited by the airplane tickets to Hawaii, even though we knew we would never stay at this timeshare 70 miles from our house. They were offering the opportunity to trade to stay in timeshares all over the world. So we went from there, came home, and tried to book the airplane tickets and realized that it required a 25-day stayover.
Wow.
In Honolulu. And, of course, none of us could give that kind of time, so the tickets were no good. And really, that was just step one of a number of steps in this whole fiasco personified.
So are you trying to sell it now?
We have been off and on for the last 5 years. Timeshares don't play by the same rules as a typical real estate deal. And so every single element of this process has been terribly disappointing. I listened to your program a lot, and I thought, well, I'm going to let old Chris have a shot at this.
Well, old Chris, what do you think?
Well, your story is so typical, the disappointment, and then you can't unload the thing. I mean, under normal circumstances, you can't unload it. But what's happening to the real estate market right now? What's happening to the vacation market at this moment? We're in the Great Recession. And so the whole situation is just really difficult. And I have no simple solution to this. I have a couple of suggestions, but you may have already pursued them. One is the company that you have the timeshare at. Is there any way that you can have them give it away to somebody else who's willing to pick up the maintenance fees?
I've not discussed it in those terms. I've discussed it with them, asking them to help me sell it. And that's been probably 4 or 5 years ago. And they had no interest in that whatsoever. But maybe this suggestion is worth trying.
The other thing is there's a reasonable website where you can search for some information, get some experience what other people have done. Their website is tug2.com. We'll put that on our website. And it just has, there's a lot of members and their discussions, and there's advice and tips. And there may be an idea that you and I aren't thinking about that is in one of the comment sections.
Chris, is this typical of timeshares?
I think that it is far too typical. I mean, what I was just thinking, what I wish is for anybody out there who's had to come on with a timeshare, we'll get the free trip, you know, just come on out here, just take a look at it. I just wish that we could play exactly what we're hearing right now.
Yeah.
It's easy to buy in, and it's really hard to get out.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Jim, thank you for calling. Good luck.
Thank you very much for your advice.
And keep us updated.
I shall.
So, Chris, George is writing in from Las Vegas, Nevada, with a vacation question. He has gotten an offer from Visa for a secured credit card, and he wants to know if they're really considered to be credit cards if he tries to use them at a hotel or a car rental place. And he's wondering if using these cards is a good option for him.
Okay, a couple of points. Let's just, I guess, do a definition first of a secured credit card. It's for people who have damaged credit, and it's a very good way to build up a credit history. You put $500 in a special account at a bank, and then, of course, you can't exceed the amount that you put into the special account. To a certain extent, you don't want to live in a life of the secured credit card. You want to use the secured credit card to get yourself back on your feet, and then if it makes sense, to just get yourself a normal credit card. But remember, from the point of view of being a customer going to a hotel or going to a restaurant, it's a credit card, as far as they're concerned.
Okay. That's all the time we have for Getting Personal on this week's show. You can find our answers to these and more questions at our website, marketplace.org. You can find Chris's blog there, too, where he takes one question every weekday. You can write in with your own question using the Getting Personal link on our website or give us a call. The number is 877-275-6669. That's 877-ASK-MONY. Chris, thank you as always for your sage advice.
It was fun.
This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. And finally, this weekend, many of us will be marking the holiday by admiring fireworks and maybe even donning a little red, white, and blue. On this week's Day in the Imagined Work Life, we hear from a man who takes his red, white, and blue very seriously.
Hello, my name is Uncle Sam, and I am the uncle of America, the United States of. Here's to you. My duties are to project a positive image of America and to make the people of America feel good about their country and themselves. And let me tell you, it's getting really hard these days. I'm not going to lie to you. Why am I so down in the dumps? Well, I figured I was the wealthiest country on earth, and in my old age I would, you know, have plenty. Then along comes this economic thing we're in, and all of a sudden it's, hello, Uncle Sam, could I have a couple of billion dollars? Yes, auto industry, you can have some. Hey, could I have a few billion dollars, Uncle Sam? It's me, your old nephew, Bank of America. Sure, here's $20 billion for you too, or whatever it was I gave him. I can't even keep track anymore. Have people been coming at me with their hands out? Everybody's been coming at me with their hands out. What am I not paying for these days? Did you buy a house this year for the first time? You're welcome. Having problems paying off your student loans? Here I come to save the day with my bottomless pockets. Whatever. You're welcome. What cash flow I have comes from, well, there's the sale of my poster, which remains popular. Don't ask me how it happened. I want you. I wish that were the case. I actually am getting a little sick of you, people who are asking me for money. It's just getting to be a lot, is what I'm saying. You know, I'm under a lot of stress, and I'm bailing out a company here, 20 companies there. And then what's going on behind me? Some guy, Bernie Madoff, has been ripping people off for 20 years. I haven't even noticed. 150 years, not enough. Of course, he's in a federal prison now. Who's picking up the tab? Hello, Uncle Sam. You're welcome. The future, I'm optimistic, frankly. You know, to a fault, maybe. I just feel like we'll pull through this. We've been through this stuff before. Trust me. I've been around for 200 years. We'll be fine.
This week's Day in the Work Life was produced by Stephen Hoffman and portrayed by Marketplace's Rico Galliano, co-host of the podcast Dinner Party Download. Find it at dinnerpartydownload.com. That's Marketplace Money for this week. Next time, when a layoff happens or a home is lost, parents may want to help their adult children with their finances, but how far should they go?
You know, that cliche of putting your oxygen mask on first before putting it on your child, I think is really poignant during these tough economic times.
Marketplace Money is produced by Deborah Clark with Stephen Hoffman and Eve Troe. Our technical director is Josh Rogerson. Our theme was composed by Mark Governor. The executive producer of the program is J.J. Yore. Remember, talk to your own expert before you make any big money decisions. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. We'll see you next week.
Want to hear something from Marketplace Money again? Help is as near as your home computer. To find audio archives of past programs and information on transcripts, just go to the internet and log on to our website. The information you need is only a few clicks away. Just point your browser to marketplace.org. Marketplace Money is supported by Thriven Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit financial service provider helping its members take charge of their financial strategies and put today's market on their side. More at thriven.com.
American Public Media.